The pressure down there is 6 times worse than the pressure here on the surface of Venus. But the heat, that's the big problem, right enough, he said easily. Hecate doesn't have enough room for heat exchangers and the cooling equipment we are using on Lucifer. Then how? Hecate's hull is honeycombed with piping that carries heat-absorbing fluid. Even the observation ports are threaded with microducts. But what good does that do, I demanded. Just moving the heat from one area of the ship to another doesn't help much. You've got to be able to get rid of the heat, get it off ship. He broke into a wide, wolfish grin. Ah, that's the elegant part of it. So? Most of Hecate's mass is ballast, ingots of a lead-based alloy. A very special alloy, one we developed out in the belt for just this purpose. Quite dense, melts at almost precisely 400 degrees Celsius. What's that got to do with anything? It's simple, Fuchs said, spreading his hands. So simple that your brilliant designers didn't think of it. He looked at me expectantly, like a teacher I remembered from prep school, who always thought I was better prepared for the day's lesson than I actually was. I turned away from Fuchs, feeling my face twisting into a frown of concentration. A metal alloy. What was the point of carrying ingots of metal for ballast when you're going down to the surface? It's hot enough down there to melt lead, I heard myself say. Right! Fuchs clapped his hands in mock applause. But I don't see... Then I caught on. The alloy ingots absorb the heat inside the ship. Precisely. And I vent the molten metal off ship, thereby getting rid of the heat they've soaked up. But that will only work for as long as you still have ingots on board. Yes, the calculations show I can spend 1 hour on the surface. Maybe I can stretch it to 70-75 minutes, but not longer. I searched for a word. Ingenious. It's ingenious if it works, he said gruffly. If it fails, then it was a crazy idea. I had to laugh at that. But he was looking past me. Past Hecate and this tight little chamber. I'm going down there, Humphreys. Down into the pit of hell. I'll be the first man to reach the surface of Venus. Live or die, no one will ever be able to take that away from me. The first man in hell. My jaw fell open. He was looking forward to it. Relishing the idea. Nothing else mattered to him. He was totally focused on it. Eyes burning, lips pulled back in an expression that might have been a display of ecstasy or a snarl of defiance. And he was not chewing any pills, either. Ironic, isn't it? He went on, glowing with expectation. We finally reach a peak of knowledge where we've virtually eliminated aging, banished death. We can live and stay young as long as we like. And what do? We fight our damnedest to reach the surface of hell. We risk our foolish necks on escapades that only a madman would undertake. There's human nature for you. I was speechless. There were no words in me to equal his fierce, maniacal intensity. At last he shook his head, pulled himself together. Okay, come along. I don't have more time to waste on this. He jabbed a thumb toward the ladder that led up into the airlock. As we made our way back to his quarters, I wondered why he had bothered showing me Hecate at all. Was it pride? Did he want me to admire the little ship and the thinking that had gone into it? His thinking, of course. Yes, I thought as we neared the bridge, he wanted to show off to somebody. To me. And he certainly seemed to be his old strong self again. Not a shred of uncertainty or infirmity in his appearance. He was looking forward to piloting Hecate down to the surface of Venus. Then it struck me. He brought me down there not merely to show off his ship. He wanted to gloat over it, to show me how much smarter and stronger he was than I, to rub my nose in the fact that he was going to go down to the surface and claim the prize money, while I sat up here in Lucifer like a hapless, helpless dimwit. My hatred for him boiled up again. And to tell the truth, I enjoyed the emotion. I took my watch on the bridge and then made my way back to the main pumping station. Fuchs had the ship circling above the wreckage now, some 5,000 meters above the jutting peaks that surrounded whatever was left of my brother and his ship. I had been fighting off the growing alarm signals that my body was sending to my brain. All through my watch at the pumps, I felt the tingling and weakness in my legs slowly spreading to my arms. My vision went slightly blurry, no matter how hard or often I rubbed at my eyes. It took a conscious effort to lift my ribcage and breathe. I even began to feel chilled, fluttery inside. I stuck it out for the duration of my watch, but I knew I couldn't last much longer without help. Like a drunk trying to prove he's still in command of his faculties, I walked stiffly up the passageway, past the bridge, past Fuchs's quarters, and then Marguerite's, heading for the sick bay. She wasn't there. The sick bay was empty. I felt so wiped out that I wanted to crawl up onto the table and close my eyes. But maybe I'd never open them again, I thought. She had to be somewhere. If my brain had been functioning right, I would have used the intercom system to track her down. But I wasn't reasoning very well. She had to be somewhere, that much I knew. Perhaps in her quarters. I forced myself back down the passageway and rapped on her door. It rattled, but there was no answer. She ought to be here, I said to myself, nettled. I slid the door open. It was unlocked. Her quarters were empty. Where in the 7 golden cities of Cibola could she be? I raged to myself. Fuchs's quarters, that's where she is. She claims she's not sleeping with him, but she's in his quarters, just the two of them, by themselves, together. It was only 3 or 4 steps to Fuchs's door. I didn't bother to knock. I yanked on the door and it slid open easily. He was on the bed, half naked, and she was bending over him. Revelations. Marguerite must have heard me as I stepped into Fuchs's compartment. She turned her head. The expression on her face was awful. "He's had a stroke," she said. I realized that she was fully dressed. Tears were running down her face. "He came off the bridge and called me here," she said, all in a rush. "The instant I came in, he collapsed. I think he's dying." The first thing that flashed through my mind, I'm ashamed to say, was that I needed Fuchs alive for another transfusion. The second, even worse, was that if he died, I could drain all his blood and use it. That would be enough to keep me going until we got back to Truax. I felt like a vampire, but those were my thoughts. Fuchs opened his eyes. "Not dying," he growled. "Just need medication." His speech was slurred, as if he were drunk. "Medication?" I asked. Fuchs raised his left hand slightly and pointed shakily toward his lavatory. His right arm lay inert by his side. Marguerite got up from the bed and rushed to the lavatory. "Kit," Fuchs called weakly after her. "Under the sink." I wasn't feeling all that strong myself, so I dragged up a chair and plopped into it, facing Fuchs on the bed. The right side of his face was pulled down slightly, the eye almost closed. It might have been my imagination, but that side of his face seemed gray, washed out, almost as if it had been frozen. "You don't look so good," he said weakly. "Neither do you." He made a sardonic rictus of a half-smile and murmured, "Two of a kind." Marguerite came back with a small black plastic case. She already had it open and was reading from the printout on the display screen set into the back of its lid. "I'm going to inject you with TPA," she said, her eyes on the screen. Fuchs closed both eyes. "Yeah." "TPA?" I asked stupidly. Fuchs tried to answer. "Tissue plasmino." He ran out of strength. "Tissue plasminogen activator," Marguerite finished for him, as she slapped a preloaded cylinder into the metal syringe from the medical kit. "It will dissolve the clot that's blocking the blood vessel."
"How can you be sure?"
"Clot buster," Fuchs said, his words blurred as if his tongue wasn't working right.
"Works every time."
I saw in the open medical kit that Marguerite had dropped on the bed beside him that several loops where cylinders had once been stored were now empty.
"How many times has this happened to you?" I blurted.
He glowered at me. He's had